You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of Pure Pleasure with Dewey Halpus on Jabberjaw Media. I am Dewey, your host with the most, bringing you more great content week after week. This week, episode 106 with Mr. Justin Sane from Anti-Flag. Guys, this band has been a huge part of my life for a long time. I know I say that about a lot of bands, and there are a lot of bands that have been a part of my life. In my 37 years, a lot of music has come and gone. Some has stayed, some has not, and Anti-Flag, since seeing that Die for the Government record at Mammoth Music in Anchorage, Alaska, back in, God, in the 90s, I'm horrible with years with music, horrible. I remember time, like, you know, places and events that were happening, where I was, but the date is, I mean, that's something I don't keep track of. So, Die for the Government at Mammoth Music in Anchorage, Alaska. The cover looked awesome. I mentioned on there I got a Reagan Youth record as well. That same day, we basically go through and just find the coolest covers. And that's, I mean, before the internet and everything else, that's how you found new music a lot of the time. Or you know, up in Alaska, a lot of it was on comps, like the Fat Records and Epitaph comps and stuff like that. But Justin was a super amazing dude. Him and I had not met before. Neither had Chris Number Two and I when we did the Chris Number Two episode, but it's awesome. Those guys are so friendly and nice and accommodating, and it was just a great time. We did it at the Punk and Drublick Festival here in Portland in their green room, and I love doing the interviews in person, and this one was extra special because it was someone who's been such a big part of my life through their artwork. And that's something I don't take lightly, and I'm very, very grateful for the impact that band has had on me. And I know they've had an impact on a lot of you guys as well. I've gotten a lot of feedback just posting up that this interview was coming, a lot of people were into it. So really stoked to have Justin on. I think you guys are really going to like this interview. They were heading out early to get to Canada, so I think we did about 45 minutes. So not as long as other episodes, but the content's there, and it's really just a good natural conversation between he and I. And I hope you guys really enjoy it. So let's get some business out of the way before we get things underway here. PurePleasurePodcast.com is the website, the newly revamped website with all the episodes. It's got a, if you're talking about the podcast to a friend, maybe they don't have the Apple podcast app. They can go to the website and there's a player on there off our megaphone that has every episode on it right on the front page, as well as everything else they need for information. So definitely send them over there if it's a first-time listener. Otherwise, you know, have them go on the podcast app, but definitely appreciate the word-of-mouth spreading that you guys do for the show. We got some sponsors on the show, like we always do. We have rockabilia.com. PC Jabberjaw is the code. Hit them up with PC Jabberjaw. Get you 10% off your order at rockabilia.com. We have artistflags.com, which I've only posted some pictures before, but the studio is lined with ridiculously huge banners and posters of every logo we've done by Wooden Cyclops or Boss Dog. Anyone who's done artwork for the show, Dan from Zayo, huge, awesome stuff. Aligning the studio, super inspiring in the practice space and all that stuff. So artistflags.com, hit them up, talk to Cody. He's the man over there. Merge Force Socks. Every day, guys, I'm wearing these things. If I'm not wearing sandals, and when it's 95 degrees here in Portland, my daughter picks them out every day for me. It's one of her favorite things. So stoked to have Merge For. Check them out on Instagram as well. And RER Studio as well on Instagram. Check them out. My buddy Ryder just made some new straps for Portugal the Man. And made me a pretty awesome one as well. Handmade, and it'll last for life. And it's super special. So check out RER Studio. All right, guys. I don't have a lot more to say here. I want to get into this interview with Justin and let you guys be a part of this conversation. And let me know what you think. PurePleasurePod@gmail.com is the email. Reach out to me on Instagram, Facebook, any of those spots. I'm available all the time. So hit me up and I'll definitely get back to you. I appreciate all the awesome feedback we're getting and having you guys week after week. So without further ado, guys, let's get into this episode of my conversation with Justin Sane from Antiflag.
From the top now. Just wants to fucking breathe. Nobody can, and everyone believes we will breathe later on. They won't die, but truthfully, they were never alive. To question the society you live in, you gotta call yourself in question. To question the answers you're given, you gotta call yourself in question. Because our confidence is out of all our heads. We're gonna kill them dead. We're gonna finish what we started. Of us lives. We don't need a world with a guarantee. A starvation got your possibility. In every home a new car, a new TV. Breaking the risk of dying of boredom. To question the society you live in, you gotta call yourself in question. Question the answers you're given. You gotta call yourself in question. Because our confidence is out of all our heads. We're gonna kill them then. We're gonna finish what we started. Of our lives. It's out of all our heads.
All right. Justin Sane from Antiflag. Welcome to the Pure Pleasure Podcast.
Well,
my friend.
Howdy. Good to be here. Good to sit down and talk to you.
This has been a long time coming, my friend. This has been. I'll give you a sticker here to take with you.
All right.
So I was telling my wife here, back in Alaska, where we grew up, Mammoth Music in Anchorage, Alaska. We would go, when we were first discovering punk rock, we would literally go to the record store, like everyone else did as a kid, and look for the coolest covers we could find and buy it. And Die for Your Government was one of those.
Hell yeah.
I picked it up. I had no idea what to expect. I think I picked that up. I picked up a Reagan Youth record.
Nice.
And it became one of our mainstays.
That's amazing.
We actually opened for Bad Religion back in Alaska at the Egan Center in my high school punk
wicked,
band.
Wicked, wicked.
And then that kicked off a whole, I don't know, 10-year music career with Portugal the Man and Anatomy of a Ghost, a couple other bands. And,
great.
And, but anyways, Antiflag's always been a staple for us.
Well, so. I'm honored and thank you. You know, it's it is amazing how there's just some iconic artwork for, you know, certain bands out there. And but, you know, you bring up Reagan Youth, and those records are just so iconic. That Reagan Youth artwork just stood out so much.
Yeah.
And I think especially for the time, because, like, I mean, I was a little young during Ronald Reagan's presidency, but I was old enough to really get it and understand what was going on. And You know, he was so devastating to a city like Pittsburgh, where, you know, he was just so anti-labor, so anti-union. Mm-hmm. He really, you know, was a president that did so much to destroy the middle class of America and the working class of America, and to really put the squeeze on the poor. And so, you know, when... And on top of all that, he was probably a racist, you know? I mean, he wasn't an outward acting racist, but he certainly said racist things from time to time, whether, you know, kind of comes back to the anti-flag song on our last record, just because you don't know you're a racist. I mean, yeah. he fit into that category really well. And, you know, growing up in a city like Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where anti-flag is from, you know... our city was devastated, starting with more or less the presidency of Ronald Reagan. And so for that reason, like, being like Reagan Youth just really resonated with me, as far as just somebody saying like, hey, what this guy's about is fucked up. And mm-hmm. I think they did it in kind of a tongue-in-cheek fun way, which was cool, you know, and it was lighthearted, which was cool. But their artwork was super iconic, and it's nice for me to hear that we were kind of Die for the Government resonated with you in that way too. That's special to hear.
Oh man, yeah. And it's seriously, to this day, like, it's stuck with us. Like, it was awesome. We started writing songs. I had no idea my political stance at the time. We went home basically that week and wrote a song called USA Incorporated. I have no idea what I was talking about.
Yeah.
But I was pissed.
Yeah.
And it literally, we probably just ripped off, you know, anti-flag riffs for the song. Sure. I'll have to go back and listen to it. But I've met Ronald Reagan and I've met Donald Trump, both by accident.
Interesting.
Once as a child and once as an adult.
Yeah.
And I had no idea. My mom, crazy. I brought home an autograph. And my mom's like, you know who that was? Apparently his Secret Service guy had a toothache. They were on a cruise in Alaska and he stopped on our little island, and I saw a bunch of police on our bikes, and I rode up there and went between someone's legs, comes out, hello young man, big old cowboy hat. I was like, I thought he was a movie star. Well, he was a movie star. And then come to find out,
he was a B movie star, but he was a pseudo movie star.
Have you seen that you know, clip of him slapping that girl in the face, and it was like acceptable in the movie, like right across the face?
It was a different time. Oh, he played second fiddle to a monkey in a movie, so that really tells you a lot about the depth of his acting ability.
Absolutely. Well, what got you started into? I mean, you've done a lot with activism, and you guys always have a message, which a lot of bands don't, but you guys have always had a message. You've always stood by what you believe. Where did you get that conviction from? Was it from your folks?
Well, it had a lot to do with my mom and dad and growing, but you know, coming back to what we were just talking about, it had a lot to do with just watching our city just be devastated by corporations who just 100% put profit over people. Mm-hmm. I mean, just watching our jobs be taken away because a corporation could save pennies, you know, or dollars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just realizing that, you know, choices that people make in a CEO boardroom, for a CEO who gets paid millions and millions in bonuses at the expense of destroying families' lives and destroying entire communities. So mm-hmm. that, you know, I grew up around that. I mean, Pittsburgh was a city that was just devastated by corporate greed, you know, and we saw that all over the United States, you mm-hmm. know. And, you know, coming back to Ronald Reagan, you know, one of the very first things that he did was he broke the back of the air traffic controller union. Mm-hmm. That was one of the very first things he did. And, you know, that was such a great example of working class people not standing together and what happens when people are divided. Because in that particular time, the pilots didn't stand with the air traffic controllers. They, for whatever reason, their union decided not to back the air traffic controllers. So Reagan was able to fire the air traffic controllers, and the pilots thought that they were going to be safe. Well, they weren't safe because, you know, starting salary for a pilot nowadays is like $18,000 at a lot of airlines. So you have somebody flying human beings who's responsible for their lives, who's making less money than somebody maybe at, you know, a McDonald's or a Starbucks or mm-hmm. a Subway. And I'm not criticizing somebody for working at any of those places. I think all work has value, and you know, if somebody is everybody has to have a job somewhere and to survive, and I respect that. But my point is just that these pilots who are paid very little money are in charge of keeping people alive, which is crazy. But so then of course my parents were activists, so they were really involved in civil rights and environmental rights, and you know, my parents were my mom passed away about a year and a half ago, and my father's still alive. But they had a really interesting story that they lived through. And I think, you know, they both, you know, I what's amazing to me about my parents is the evolution that they went through as people. Mm-hmm. Because they grew up in these, like my dad's from Ireland. So he grew up in just this deeply religious Irish Catholic family, mm-hmm. you know, and just growing up in that culture. I mean, the church was as powerful as the government in Ireland at that time. The priest could dictate what would happen to your family in Ireland. So it's it really was, you know, religion was such a huge part of my dad's life growing up. And mm-hmm. for my mother, it wasn't that much different. She was born to an Irish American family, and but again, you know, my parents really were dedicated to this really deep religious faith that they had. And but over the years, my parents kind of came to this belief that the religion actually was controlling people, and not in a positive way. That my mother really led the charge, because she could see that the Catholic Church didn't give women the same opportunities that it gave to men. And when the feminist movement came along, you know, that really resonated with her, and she thought, well, you know, there's something wrong about this. And mm-hmm. she totally walked away from the church, which I think that for someone who grew up, you know, my parents will both tell you they were brainwashed. And I think that for somebody who basically grew up in a cult, to be able to break away from that brainwashing is so almost impossible for most people.
Yeah.
So, of course, that was a big part of my parents' evolution. The idea that they're like, oh, you know, why shouldn't all people be treated equally? And so it started there. And I think what was really interesting too about my folks, though, that was positive, they took the positive things away from the Catholic Church, especially kind of the theology that you should fight for the poor, and that, you know, you should fight for people who don't have equality. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jesus's idea of being with the poor and, you know, supporting the poor before you support the rich. And so I think as a result of that, the positive that came out of the Catholic Church for them is that they ended up being part of the civil rights movement and anti-nuclear movement, environmental movement, the, you know, women's fighting for women's rights, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. And you were really lucky to grow up in that environment. I mean, that really shaped, you know, I mean, you didn't have to break away necessarily from something. And I mean, it was probably a pretty solid transition into punk rock. I mean,
totally.
You didn't have to like say, hey, fuck you, Dad, I'm buying this record. Right, you know, they were probably pretty supportive. I mean, do you remember some of the first records that really turned you on to what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, and that's true. And I mean, now that said, there were 9 kids in my family, again, a result
Jesus
of being
Christ.
Catholic. So my mom had
no birth
had
control.
9 children, yeah. And she was deep in the Catholic Church. And then one day she was like, you know what? Fuck this, which is crazy. Like, it took you 9 kids to figure that out, Mom, you know, but it did, you know. And it was more a result of what was happening at the time, because the feminist movement came to light, and mm-hmm. that was really what had my mom question, like, yeah, why can't we use birth control? Are you just forcing women to have children to control them? And yeah. you know, and it all went from there. That said, I'm glad I was born. Thank you, Mom and Dad.
Sure.
You know, but yeah. So in my family, though, by the time I was born, it had gone pretty radical, you know? And so, and my brothers and sisters, a lot of them listened to punk.
Okay.
So I was just kind of, you know, grandfathered into punk because of my brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, even just as a kid, like, I mean, I took a cassette deck player into first grade with a Sex Pistols cassette, you know? And like, that was, I mean, I just heard it around the house and I liked it. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, this is music, you know?
Yeah.
It didn't really resonate that it was like punk.
Sure.
You know? And there, we were like, you know, my sister and I would put on like puppet shows with the Beatles. It was like, you know, we had like each of us would have two band members and we'd make them out of brown paper bags and like lunch bags, and we'd do Paul and George and Ringo and John, and you know, we'd play a Beatles song, and then my family would sit on the other side of the kitchen table and we'd have our hands up over the other side of the table singing along to the Beatles, and like we did that with Kiss. So and my family was like always really supportive of art and music, and my parents really believed that we should all learn a musical instrument. So everyone in my family played, and because the Irish culture was such a big part of our family, like we literally had like our own little Irish band, like just within the family. I mean, there was enough of us, you know, and kind of everybody played. So that was, that was really fun. I mean, that's that was what my family did for fun a lot of evenings. Like, we spent a lot of time together. It was a really cool way to grow up. It was also insane and chaotic.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because you can't have nine children and it not be totally insane.
Sure.
You know?
Well, and, absolutely not.
And I think that there were so many positives about it, but there were so many negatives. I, even though I grew up in that and I loved it and I look back on it and it was amazing, I really think that it's wrong to have that many kids. I mean, some kids are gonna get neglected, and they did, you know, and it, despite my parents' very best efforts, you know, and so it was a crazy way to grow up. But yeah, to be like radical in my family, you actually, to rebel against my family, it was like you had to say things like, "Mom and Dad, I'm gonna join the army," you know, like that's how my brother rebelled. So it wasn't like, so being a punk rocker, I just went, parents like, "Oh, I want to have a punk band. That's what I'm going to do." They were like, "Cool, get after it, kid. Like, what are you waiting for?" You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where did you fall in that group of kids?
Well, I was the youngest.
The
of
youngest.
Nine.
So you didn't get neglected.
I did. I think that there were times I definitely did. I mean, my mom basically had a nervous breakdown about the time I was in sixth or seventh grade.
Oh, wow.
So she was sort of, and looking back on it, I understand why. I mean, my parents were financially desperate. I mean, things just got really bad in Pittsburgh. My mom worked and was taking care of all these kids. My dad worked. And I think that it just finally caught up to her. You know, I just think she was burning the wick at both ends. And I don't begrudge my mother at all. When I needed her, really bad needed her, she showed up. Like if I had a problem at school or something.
Yeah.
But she definitely, for a couple of years there, was just not capable of, you know, making sure that everything that needed to be happening in my life was happening.
Yeah.
And I realized this, like, looking back, you know, now as an adult and thinking about, like, how would I raise kids? And there were definitely periods where I was on my own, you know. I had to figure it out, even with all my older brothers and sisters, because if you think about it, like, they were great, but they're young people just trying to figure out life. You know, I mean, I mattered to them a lot and they were great to me, but you know, when you're young, life's hard.
Yeah.
You're figuring it out, you're going to school, you're getting a job, whatever it is that you're doing. So they definitely were there for me, but that day-to-day kind of thing at times could be pretty difficult.
Yeah. What did you turn to in those times when things got difficult? I mean,
I think that's why punk was so important. It definitely, when I felt really alone or like I didn't know where to turn, I definitely had music.
Yeah.
You know, and I found punk, and it was like, you know, it's earlier, like, well, it was the first punk that really, like, I think my punk discovery kind of started in seventh grade, and my sister played Spray Paint the Walls by Black Flag to me, and I was like, this is what I do now. Like, I was like, fuck yes, like that blew my mind. It was just like, it was it was so intense musically. It was it was like chaos, like in a way musically like that I'd never heard. And it was tongue in cheek. It to me, it just made me laugh. I was like, is this a joke or is this serious or what the fuck is this? And so I went deep in like Black Flag at that time. And but that was like where I was like, all right, I'm going to learn to play music in a serious way. And when I say music, I mean punk rock. This is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And yeah, so punk really always filled that void for me. And I think that's why it's always, you know, stuck with me and why I've never really strayed too far musically outside of punk rock. I mean, I honestly like all kinds of music. I'll go see all kinds of music, but you know, it's funny. Like I, at different times have written different kinds of songs with different friends, whether they're like in, you know, like rock bands or whether they're in pop bands or whatever. Yeah. And it always kind of, they're like, man, can tell you're in a punk band. Like it always, no matter how hooky or poppy or whatever it is, they're always like, you know, you always somehow find a way to make this a punk song. So it's kind of a funny thing. I just think that that's really at my core who I am.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what, I mean, you guys have had a good amount of success too over the years. I mean, starting, you know, pretty grassroots and then just building and building and building. And as the popularity grows, you know, I always see you guys sticking true to your roots. But I mean, how has that affected you guys? And I mean, does it just make you guys stronger together, stronger in your beliefs? I mean, is there things you've been asked or been people try to have you compromise? You know, through your ride, because you guys did go to what was it, RCA?
Yeah.
Briefly. Yeah. And I remember Chris talking about you guys structured your deal pretty great. I mean, you started some nonprofit. I mean, because you know there was going to be blowback from that, from the fan base.
Sure.
That, oh, shit, what's happening here, you know? But, it, I mean, what kind of stuff has happened to you over the years where you've had to either, people have either asked you to question or, you know, go back?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, when you make a living playing music, first of all, it's not easy, you know, and I think that everybody thinks that you've made more money than you've made or that it's easier than it's been, you know. And trust me, I'm not like cry me a river because I feel like so grateful and so lucky that we've been able to do this now for like 25, 26 years as a band. It's incredible. It's been an incredible ride. And, you know, I know a lot of people do jobs that are really, really hard and some of them are really, really shitty. And so I'm never going to complain about the fact that I got to play in a band for this long as a living. That said, I mean, yeah, there have been good times and bad times. It's like anything else. You know, I think that it almost just mimics your life. You know, life is hard and life is good, you know.
What's going on, guys? This is Dewey from Peer Pleasure, and I want to tell you about our newest sponsor, DistroKid. DistroKid distributes your music across all online platforms. They are an amazing company. I've enjoyed working with them the last few weeks, and they're going to be with us for a while, and I really, really appreciate that. I love working with great companies, and DistroKid is one of them. They have an awesome thing they're doing right now called Splits. Now, if you're working, as most people are, online, doing collaborations with people from all over the country, all over the world, as easy as that is with the internet, you want to get those people paid when you put that music online. And Splits can do that. You can add an unlimited amount of collaborators to any track. You can change the splits at any time. You can add or remove collaborators at any time. You can see previous splits. And all your collaborators are going to have to do is sign up for a DistroKid membership, a DistroKid account, so they can get paid. And as always, DistroKid never takes a cut. You and your collaborators get 100% of the earnings in total. A couple other awesome things that they do is they set up an official artist YouTube channel. You can use Spotify Canvas, synced lyrics, promo card to promote your release on social media, a mini video for your socials as well. There's just so many awesome things about using DistroKid. And like I said, I don't advertise things I don't use, haven't signed up for. I have signed up for this. It is a breeze, literally a breeze. And you can get going right away. So definitely check out DistroKid. And I want to give you 30% off your first year's DistroKid membership at any level. That is distrokid.com/VIP/PPP for Peer Pleasure Podcast. Once again, that is 30% off your first year's DistroKid membership at any level. distrokid.com/VIP/PPP. Go check out DistroKid right now. distrokid.com/VIP/PPP
for 30% off.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the one hit thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week. So pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.
Hey guys, this is Dewey from Peer Pleasure, and I wanted to tell you about Premium Pleasure, our premium subscription service that's available now. Peerpleasure.supportingcast.fm is the website. There's three tiers, Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3. Tier 1 is $5 a month. It gets you the ad-free experience. Tier 2 gets you access to the Peer Pleasure Passcast. It gets you access to the videos of the interviews. It gets you merch discounts. Tier 3 is $20 a month. That gets you all of that. It gets you the Passcast, gets you the video footage, discounts on merchandise, and monthly Zoom calls with myself and other guests. We're going to have all kinds of stuff in there for you. There's all kinds of stuff in there for you now. There is, I believe, 30 to 40 videos of these interviews. There is multiple episodes of the Passcast. The Passcast is a podcast that I'd started separately that is me and another podcaster or me and a guest discussing a deep dive into their favorite episode of Peer Pleasure. So there's a bunch of those on there. So-and-so and I would talk about the Chino Moreno episode. So-and-so and I would talk about the Yvette Young episodes. And we would do a deep dive and tell where they came from, how we got the guest, stories of that weren't discussed on the podcast or maybe weren't in there. It's just another glimpse behind the curtain. So that's the big deal with this premium service, is giving you a glimpse behind the curtain of how the podcast is made, gives you access to things I'm doing and things that we're doing with the show, gives you, you know, ad-free stuff. It gives you just all kinds of things that we could throw in there to help make it a valuable part of your month. Because I put everything out there on this show. I put everything I have into this show. So being able to give you guys that little bit of extra is a big deal to me, and having your support is a big deal to me, because if we don't support our artists and creatives, we're not going to have any left. So I appreciate it. Peerpleasure.supportingcast.fm is the website. Go sign up today and get some of this premium pleasure.
For us, and I think for anybody who plays music for a living, especially people who haven't like been able to go to that next tier where you've just made a ton of money, that money's not any kind of an issue to you. And we never got to that point. I mean, really, we're a working class band where, you know, I mean, it's not like I love to tour, thankfully. And I think as a unit, we love to be on the road together and do it. And we love to be on stage. So we're lucky in that way. But like, you know, if we stop touring next year, I'm going out and getting a job. I mean, it's not like we can just stop. So, so I think anytime though that money comes into it where you're earning your living doing this, there are times when you're making choices and it's hard to make some of those choices. Like it definitely enters into your mind. Like, are we compromising what we believe in because we're trying to survive? You know, I think that we've overcome those hurdles, you know, and ultimately I just think that everything that we've ever done has been something that we've felt good about doing. We've walked away from a lot of opportunities with things that we didn't feel good about doing. And the times I think when we have been most successful and it's worked, especially just worked to the point where we all get along, because if you're not getting along, it doesn't, you can't make this kind of thing last for the amount of time that we've made it last.
Yeah.
Then, you know, when we're all feeling good about the choices that we're making, that's when this works, you know? And I guess coming back to like the major label, it's so cliche to be like, well, we wanted people to hear what we had to say. We really wanted people to hear what we had to say. We felt like we'd hit kind of a ceiling with Fat as far as we did two records that both did really well on Fat, but we could see there were a couple of bands that came before us on Fat. I would definitely, one of them that really made an impact with me was Good Riddance. Good Riddance was a band that I just absolutely loved. They're an amazing band, and they just talked about really important issues. And I could see that, you know, they were very successful on Fat, but they just hit a ceiling, and I was like, they're just stuck.
Yeah.
And they're not going to get through that.
Mm-hmm.
And people should hear what they have to say, and they're not going to.
Yeah.
And so we were into the Iraq War, and at that particular time, there wasn't an American Idiot record. There wasn't the Dixie Chicks saying, fuck you to this war. There wasn't any opposition to the war practically, you know, that in music. There wasn't anybody willing to step outside of their comfort zone and take a risk and be political. And so we just thought, look, we have a chance to do this. Let's do it. We had been courted by major labels for years before that. I mean, years and years and years. So for us, to me, that was like, fuck it. Here's an opportunity to do this. And they wanted us so bad that we could just write the contract, you know?
Sure.
Not so much financially, but just making sure that we had artistic control over everything that we wanted to do. So in that respect, yeah, I mean, for me, especially like when I started a band, I was like, I'll never sign to a fucking major label. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, life changes. Opportunities come. Things stare you in the face, good and bad. And, you know, it's so easy to, you know, one day say, I'll never do this. And then 10 years later, your life is very different and you find yourself doing something that you never thought you would do.
Sure.
You know, and I think because the punk ethos was so important to all of us, and it still is, that was not an easy decision to come to. And we were kind of like, fuck, you know, in so many ways, we don't want to do this. I think that the thing that allowed us to do it is we found the right people at the right record label. And they were on our team. They were 100% backed everything that we did. And so ultimately, in the end, I feel really good about those records and making that choice. And what I find is that those records have the biggest reach. You know, it's so funny. I mean,
yeah.
they did what we wanted to do. And like, you know, you meet people all the time now where they come up to you and they're like, I found For Blood and Empire and it totally changed my outlook. I was going to join the military. I thought that we had to avenge 9/11, you know, and like I found that record. And so, you know, now I'm a lawyer for a human rights organization. I mean,
yeah.
We hear those stories all the time. So I don't have any regrets about those choices that we made. It wasn't fun in a lot of ways at the time, but I feel good ultimately about the choices that we made.
Okay. Well, coming from where you come from, playing the music you do, when you say you were getting courted by major labels all the time, what did that do for you? Did that validate what you're doing? Did that make you feel weird that they were even interested? Like, why the fuck is a major label want us? Are we doing something wrong here? Or are we too commercial? Like, what did that do to you as a songwriter, them wanting you so bad? Like, you know, it wasn't like the Nirvana boom where they signed every band from Seattle, right? Green Day had already come and gone, like, as far as, you know, the big sign every Green Day band, sign every punk band.
Yeah.
It wasn't that way anymore, it didn't seem like. Like, what?
Well, at that time, Rise Against got signed, then We got signed, then Against Me got signed.
Okay.
All to major labels.
Okay.
So there was kind of this revival of punk, and they were looking for the next big thing.
Yeah.
So it was out there, you know, and again, like, for, I'd say 4 or 5 years before that, they were just courting us. It was like all the time, you know.
Yeah.
So it was definitely there. When Rise Against went to major and it was kind of starting to work, and they were like, well, they were on Fat, Anti-Flag's on Fat, who else is on Fat? You
against
know, they were
me.
Kind of looking around. Yeah. And Against Me was there. So it, and all of us, and all of us and all of those three bands talk to all the same people, mm-hmm. you know, like all the same people yeah. here talk to all of us, you know.
Went to
and
so many dinners or lunches.
Right, like we would compare notes and like, who's a creep, you know, who's actually cool, who's on yeah. our team, what's it, you know. And I think all of those bands cared about those things, you know. Mm-hmm. So I just think that for me, I was just, I wasn't, it was like, I wasn't like, oh, you know, are we writing the wrong kind of song? Are we too poppy or whatever? Because I was just writing what was coming out of me. I didn't really know at that time. I mean, mm-hmm. now, to be honest with you, I could write songs for different genres just because I've been writing songs forever, and you just yeah. learn, and it's your craft, and you just get better at it, hopefully, you know. But at that time, I didn't know how to make a song any other way and other than a punk song. And you know, so I sat down and played Turncoat. It was gonna come out to be a punk song. There was no mm-hmm. other way I could do it other than what it is.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense, because and so it's like kind of that thing where you do everything with a clear conscience and a clear heart, and what comes out, I mean, you can't feel bad about it, you know what I mean, because it came out true, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, if they saw you know, value in it, it was genuine, because you did it. You weren't writing songs to get signed. It's just, I was curious. I have always been curious what that would feel like for someone in your position. You know what I mean? Were you not setting out to like, oh, you know, writing a pop song super hard, and we need to write this way. And, you know, the newest record, American Fall, it was one of my favorite records of the year. And it's one of the catchiest records I've ever heard, but yeah. it's angry.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's awesome.
Because,
like, it's gets you, like, you get fired up, but yeah. still you're bobbing your head, right. and the guy next to you in the car that's listening to something else is just like, hey, what is that?
Yeah.
You know, it's got appeal.
Well, you know, really early on, we were lucky enough to meet Billy Bragg, and one of the things that he told us, he's like, look, if you want people to hear what you're saying, you need to bring it to them in a palatable way.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that has always kind of stuck with us. But, you know, it is interesting, because I just said, like, oh, I know how to write different kinds of songs. I can mm-hmm. write this kind of song, I write that kind of song. But just at that particular time, and this definitely still happens to me, especially when I'm writing for Anti, like, more than anything, just certain things just come out in a, and I don't know if it's because of where I'm at in my life, what's happening in my life, or, and I think in retrospect, it is. I think when I compare certain songs to, like, oh, what was happening in my life at that time? That song's really dark, you know, and look mm-hmm. back, I'm like, oh, fuck, yeah, my life kind of sucked at that time. And it's pretty interesting, like, with American Fall, because so many songs are, like, you know, just because, you know, Racist is, like, a really fucking poppy song yeah. about this kind of really ugly thing.
Yeah.
And I think, to be honest, what was happening was Donald Trump had just got elected.
Mm-hmm.
We could see that there was just going to be a lot of ugliness on the horizon. He already brought so much ugliness in his campaign, so much division, you know, all the xenophobia, you know, just racism and bigotry. And of course, you know, the sexism with the sexual assault against women. I mean, you could just see where it was going. And I think, honestly, in my subconscious, I was thinking to myself, we need to write some songs that can make, we're going to write the average Anti-Flag like punk song, you know, a song mm-hmm. like The Criminals. And that's going to be a song that rips, and it's going to be hard, even though it might have a little pop edge to it.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I think subconsciously it was like, we need to write some music that, it's, yeah, it's saying something, but it also makes people feel good mm-hmm. because people are going to need to feel good coming up yeah. in these next couple of years. And I think that has come to be true, because especially, you know, of course, we look at what's happening at the border. I mean, like, it's so hideous, and it's so heinous, and it's, I think one thing that's kind of interesting about it, though, is that it's a lot of validation to what a lot of, you know, political music has been warning people about over the years. Like, the idea that authoritarianism, it's just outside the door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're not fighting, or you're not awake, or you're not aware of what's happening in the world, then you're failing, because the right wing, they never sleep. You know, you would think the KKK could come back and the way they have, but just be out in the open, mm-hmm. you know? But I think that punk music has been warning against that for a long time. I mean, we've always been called like, oh, you're radicals. We're like, well, you know what? It's fucking here. You know, like, is what we were saying really that radical? Because we were just warning you against these kind of things. And I think the point being that we talked about the failings of our government that would make it possible for something like Donald Trump to happen. Mm-hmm. And so I think that those warnings actually were very valid. I don't think that they were radical ideas at all. I think that they were just a really good analysis of what was happening in our country. And, you know, we being from Pittsburgh, I mean, we saw so many people being left behind during the Obama years. What I thought was really interesting when Obama was running, he never said the poor. He always said the middle class, mm-hmm. which really resonated with me because where we live in Appalachia, there's a lot of poor people.
Yeah.
And having grown up poor, I was like, hey, dude, what about the poor? Mm-hmm. But Obama was always middle class, middle class, middle class. And I'm like, is there some polling out there that says to him he should only say middle class and never say the word poor? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it was in, like, on our song American Spring, that we had a song where we kind of talked about that, the idea that the poor just being shit on and left behind during this Obama administration.
Yeah, by everyone. You know?
Yeah. And so, yeah, so I just think, though, that it's just kind of interesting that, you know, punk music and, you know, folk music and music that has a message, I think that that message will always be valid because the reality is that we can't get lazy. You know, you win one fight, the next fight's coming. You, mm-hmm. if you get lazy, you get Donald Trump. And I'm not saying that we can't party sometimes and have a good time and get out there and take a break. You know, we all need it. But I'm just saying that it is important to make sure that all people's rights are being respected and that we actually work to have a more egalitarian society. And I think the number one thing that Anti-Flag is really stresses and that we all really believe in as a band is just having empathy for people, understanding mm-hmm. like, fuck, life is really hard for a lot of people. And, you know, a lot of people don't have much. A lot of people don't have anyone. Like, if we can put on a show that's fun and for a couple hours people can come together and have a good time and feel like, oh, wow, I have this thing. I have this punk, you know, I have music, a music community. That's what punk did for me when I really felt isolated and alone, especially like in high school where I was like one of the only punk kids at my school or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's why during our live show, we're like, yeah, we want to talk about some issues that are important to us, but the number one thing that we want our show to be is a good time and mm-hmm. a place where people come and they feel like they belong. And that's why we do the handshake at the end. That's why we have everybody at the end of the show put their arms around each other, because it's like, yo, you know, you're not alone in this. If we have nothing else, we have this music.
Sure.
You know, and we have each other through this music.
Absolutely. And you guys nailed it. I mean, this new, the last two records have been some of the catchiest I've ever heard from you guys.
Cool,
you know
thanks,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is awesome. And it, like I said, it, like with Races, like that song is brutal when you listen to the lyrics, like it, but it's like, it's eye opening. And you say very specifically, you know, you list the different people that you see and what the stereotypes and all that stuff. But at the same time, like, you're bobbing your head and you're humming the melody. It's
yeah,
pretty, like Rage
cool.
Against the Machine,
really nice
same thing,
hear.
Came out
yeah.
blasting. Major label, who cares? Like, they
yeah.
are pissed.
Right.
It's that, you know,
right.
and they made a change.
Right.
You guys have done stuff with Tom Morello too, right? Here and there? Like,
well, yeah, and I mean, not to like make this whole thing about the major label, but again, I mean, we spent a lot of time with Tom Morello
yeah.
from Rage Against the Machine, and when the major stuff came up, he was like, do it, you know?
Really?
Oh yeah,
oh, yeah.
You know, he's like, look, Rage couldn't have done what Rage did. Rage could not have been what Rage was without
yeah.
the major label. And, you know, I mean, anybody who tries to tell me that Rage Against the Machine didn't have a major impact on so many people, I mean, I was on tour with them and, you know, I meet their fans every day that were just like, because of Rage Against the Machine, I completely changed my life, you know?
Yeah.
That's not everybody.
No.
I mean, some people come to bop their head and
yeah.
fucking rock out, and that's cool too, but yeah, I mean, so that being with Tom, I mean, he definitely was an advisor through that whole process
mm-hmm.
and really, you know, that was really helpful and meaningful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, what's next for Anti-Flag? What's next
for
you?
I do want to say one thing, because
yeah,
you brought
ahead.
It up, the last two records. I mean, I will say that, like, it's I'm really so proud of our last two records and American Spring and American Fall. Mm-hmm. And I hope that people who are listening to this, if they listen to Anthem like 10 years ago and they haven't bought a record, I hope they'll check those records out. Because I think absolutely. It's some of the best music we've ever recorded, you know, and it's exciting to me, sort of this phase of our band's life, mm-hmm. you know, where I feel like we're writing some of the best songs we've ever written. And I feel like the topics that we're writing about, we understand better than we ever had in our entire lives, you know,
yeah.
and they're things that are more meaningful to us, I think, as I get older than they even were when I was younger, because of the experiences now that I've had in my life, you know, to go out and interact with people and just interact with people who are truly struggling and, you know, and to go all over the world and to realize, like, you know, these issues that the people are having, everybody's having them, you yeah. know, and people all feel the same all over the world. It really validated sort of the idea for me of Anti-Flag as the band, as the band continued and we went to different parts of the world. I mean, we started the band, I always had this idea that, look, people in other countries really aren't that different. The problem are power hungry people who want to exploit us and use us for their gain.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the longer the band's gone on, when we've gone to Asia and we've gone to other continents and different places that I had never gone when I was younger. And you realize, like, yeah, that's so fucking true,
yeah.
you know? And so, so in that respect, like, I feel like these records, they're more intelligent and they're better records and they're smarter records. But at the end of the day, the whole idea behind the idea that we are more than just a flag, we are more than a nationality, mm-hmm. a nationality. I think when Anti-Flag started with that philosophy, I think that philosophy stays intact. And it's, but it is exciting to go out and play the new songs and see them connect with people and that they are meaningful to people. I mean, Brandenburg Gate and American Attraction are two of our biggest songs now.
Yeah.
And yeah. and that's kind of crazy for a band, like, that doesn't happen in every band that's been around for 20 some years. You mm-hmm. know, usually it's like you play your two big records from whatever time period. And just to me, to be honest, I don't fucking take it for granted at all. Like, it's mm-hmm. really special when we're on stage and I see people singing along to Brandenburg Gate and I'm like, fuck, it's amazing that, you know, we've been able to write a song that connects with people and is meaningful to people today, because you don't know how long that's going to happen for. And that's really special.
Yeah.
For me, I mean, for us, that's really special. And I'm really grateful that we've been able to have that still connect with people in that way. But it's honestly, it's not something I take for granted, because you don't know how that's going to change over the years.
Sure. And life experiences, I mean, you can't trade that for anything in the world. And you get to travel and see things. They don't, like, was it Ronald Reagan? They hired actors in China when he flew over there to come out and check the mail and wave and all that stuff and shied people away.
Crazy.
I mean, you don't have any of that. You get it all to the teeth. And it's something from touring, with my touring days too, I don't take it for granted at all, because you see how other people live.
Yeah.
And then you come back here, and I'm a commercial plumber by trade. So I yeah. work with a lot of right-wing people
yeah.
that are, you know, oh, that's the queer that's running for office or whatever. And they've never seen another country. They've never seen squalor. They've never seen any of it. They
right.
have, they're right. just sheltered. And I value having that experience and seeing, you know, even if it's out of van or bus window,
yeah,
seeing it. And I know that is actually fucking happening.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's very valuable.
Yeah. I mean, and I will say, like, it's, in a way, it's like when you travel overseas, especially like some really poor countries, you know, and you see people just living in literally tin shacks, you know, that are just mm-hmm. lined up. I mean, they live in places that a lot of people in America wouldn't let their dog live in, you know?
Yeah.
And you realize, like, wow, America really, we do have a standard of living that is, even poor people in America, not everyone, but a lot of people have a standard of living that is so far superior to what many people around the world have. And for me, that's the frustration of America, that it could even be better. Mm-hmm. And that we have so much potential here, and it's continuously squalored by or squandered by our politicians, you
yeah.
know, and by power hungry people and by greedy people. I mean, it's so hard to calculate the amount of harm and damage that greed causes, you know, and it's, I think it's so important to kind of remind myself, like for me personally, like what I have and to be grateful for the things I have, you know, because I realize like so many people have a lot less, and it's so easy in life to look at like, oh, what don't I have? You know, it's so easy to go there, but definitely the band has given me an experience to kind of open my eyes and think about those things a little bit more. And for that reason, I think it's special for people to travel and to go overseas and see how other people live, but also just for that interaction. I mean, for us to go to a primarily Muslim country or a totally Muslim country, which we've done. And just, you know, it's really cool. Like you have kids come out to the show and like, you know, girls in hijab and things like that. And, you know, you play the show and afterwards they're like amazing and they're kind and they're fun and they care about the things that you care about. And you realize like, wow, you know, we hear all this right-wing rhetoric about Muslims and they're dangerous. And, you know, to be honest, I think all religion is ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, I don't back any religion. I would rather people not be Christian or Muslim or anything else. But my point is just that in our country, you know, we kind of hear all this rhetoric about Muslims and people other than the Christian white person. And when you travel, it opens your eyes a lot. And, you know, of course, you don't need to travel to figure these things out either.
Sure. Well, I got to get you out of here. We've gone a little bit over our time.
Cool. It's great. I've really enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for your music and being one of the first people to open my eyes to a different worldview. I grew up in a Mormon household like this. I mean, that album was transformative.
Wow. And, that's amazing. That's
you know,
so
it
inspiring.
It was a piece in
hear.
The puzzle. You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
And to where we are, what we are, and keep fighting the good fight, man.
Hell yeah. I can relate so much just because of what bands like other bands did for me, whether it was The Clash or Dead Kennedys or it was. So that's really special for me to hear. Yeah. So thank
awesome.
You.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it. Well, thank you, Justin.
Yeah. Cheers.
All right, brother.
Thank you.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Justin Sane from Anti-Flag. What an awesome dude. I mean, that guy can just talk and talk, and I love it. It was awesome just watching his mind work. When you're face-to-face, you can watch body language and eye movements, and, you know, it sounds creepy, I guess, but I enjoy that because what I'm doing on this show is trying to preserve conversation, preserve words, preserve stories, get all that stuff together so it's not just a text message or an email. And that's one thing you can't get over the phone is watching someone's mind work as they're conversing with you. And so watching Justin was fascinating, just his body movements and you know, just watching. I mean, because he's so passionate about what we're talking about. It's something that's very important to him. You can tell. Because his whole demeanor changes and he gets very, very excited and super cool. So I got a lot out of this conversation, a lot of things I didn't know, a lot of his story I'd not heard before. And I was just really appreciative and grateful to spend the time, you know, especially when they're trying to get out of town to get to the next show. So big thanks to Justin. Big thanks to everyone in Anti-Flag's camp. What an awesome group. I mean, they're like, hey, can we do anything for you? Can we get your gear in somehow? You know, if we need to sneak it in, we can. Because I usually bring a backpack with recording gear, and it's a festival, and they don't allow that. So everyone, down to the tour manager, just awesome people. What a great team. So shout out to the Anti-Flag team. You guys are awesome. Yeah, Josh Massey and Jesse over at the PR. Awesome dudes. And a big shout out to all you guys for coming back week after week. So I'm going to stop rambling here because I've got a bunch of stuff going on. And I want to get this episode complete and out to you guys in a timely fashion so you guys can check it out. So as you already have, because we're at the end. So see what I'm saying? I'm losing my mind here. I've got so much going on. I've got a lot of changes going on in my world and I may bring that up later, but right now it's all fresh and new, so trying to keep head above water and get everything together and stay on top of things. So guys, I really appreciate having you know, stay strong out there. You know, if you got stuff going on in your life, reach out to me, man. peerpleasurepod@gmail.com. I'm here to listen to you and like you guys listen to me every week, you know, whether it's by force or not. reach out to me. I'm here for you and Hopefully I can help. Big thanks to, again, to Annie Flag, and big thanks to you guys. All right, guys, as always, we'll see you on the radio.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Frates from the Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11. Oh.